Thanks for downloading Think from KERA 90.1 Dallas-Fort Worth. You can learn more and support this program at kera.org.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Fox Searchlight, presenting Once, the tale of two kindred spirits making music and finding romance on the bustling streets of Dublin, now playing in select theaters.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Does a venue for dissent weaken the power of faith or make it stronger? And what happens when any church is forced not just to acknowledge differing views from within its ranks, but to argue them in a place as public as the internet? Those are questions Ben Cole has had to tackle. He is pastor of Arlington's Parkview Baptist Church and the author of the widely read blog located at baptistblog.wordpress.com, where he's been openly critical of some prominent leaders in the Southern Baptist Convention. Michael Erard is a journalist who writes about Cole's influence and that of other blogging Baptists in this month's edition of the Texas Observer magazine. We have them both with us today. Michael and Ben, welcome to Think.
Thanks, Chris.
Hi, Chris. Thank you.
We'll start with you, Ben. How would you characterize your blog and what you're trying to do there?
Well, that's probably a question I have to ask myself daily. What exactly is my blog? What purpose does it serve? Sometimes it serves the purpose of just ranting, venting my frustrations, or even expressing my satisfaction and pleasure and delight at being a Christian, an evangelical Christian, in a environment that is not always understanding of that particular perspective. Sometimes it's been an occasion for me to be very pointed in my critique and dissent. Other times it's allowed me to provide balance to some perspectives that I think have been offered from convention leadership and the SBC life. So.
Did you start it, though, thinking, okay, this is the place where I'm going to be able to publicly air my discrepancies?
Well, the nature of blogs is that it is a public airing of one's views. I don't think I started it with any expectation that the readership would peak as it has or climb as it did. So that was somewhat interesting. Nevertheless, Baptists are people who like controversy, and we are controversial folk. And so I guess in retrospect, it shouldn't have surprised me that that there would be that kind of interest in a controversial blog. And for better or for worse, my blog did become controversial, and I became controversial. And I hope that I won't carry that moniker around for the rest of my life, but for a season, I'm fine with it.
Michael, how did this attract your attention?
I first noticed Ben because I was researching a story for the New Republic about the controversy surrounding private prayer language. And in doing some research on the web, kept encountering either the name of or the comments of this pastor named Ben Cole.
And so you sort of started looking at the power that the blog had. Is that sort of what attracted you as well to the story and how many different kinds of people were reading it?
That was part of it. It was also one thing that impressed me really was how civil and how rational these Baptist bloggers were to each other and how articulate they were in writing. You know, one thing that's amazing about them is they'll disagree with each other sometimes vehemently, and it seems like there's a tremendous amount of personal animosity between them, when in fact they will then close their messages with statements of great feelings of Christian love and fellowship. And that impressed me also.
How can you do that, Ben? How do you separate out this passionate discord that you feel from the way you feel about the individual?
Yeah, well, perhaps we're just schizophrenic. I think that I've described to Michael, and he was kind enough to put those comments in the article, that Southern Baptist life, Christian life, church life in America is a family. And families, anybody that, whether they're Christian or non-Christian, understands that you can have just the strongest discord within a family unit. You can have fighting and hair pulling and biting and all sorts of rancor, raise a ruckus in the family. And at the end of the day, you're still family. And you love each other and you appreciate each other and you don't want one another to hurt or suffer. or experience pain or loss. At the same time, you can be very, very disappointed and express that disappointment in some very pointed ways.
Yeah, I don't know if it's equivalent to fighting and hair pulling, but certainly you have been exceptionally tough on Paige Patterson, who's the former head of the Southern Baptist Convention, including things like putting the value of his house and the square footage and comparing that to the square footage of, I don't know, Winona Judd's house and all these other sort of people. Why do it in that format?
Yeah, that's a question that I've been asked countless times. Usually when I'm typing on my keyboard, there's a sly grin that's curled around the corners of my mouth. And perhaps that's gotten me in more trouble than I had wished. There is a sense that there has developed in Southern Baptist life a disparity between the common pastor out in the common church and the challenge that is given to that pastor and his church to increase their giving to our unified mission funding mechanism, the cooperative program, and to do so sacrificially and generously and consistently. And so I think that as the call has come out to the local church, to the small church pastor to increase his giving through our unified funding mechanism, that there comes a greater accountability. And I have been critical of Dr. Patterson. All that said, deep down under it all, I still have a great fondness and respect for him and wish that this season in our convention's life had not brought us to this point, but it has.
This is that quality that I'm talking about, Chris.
The ability to sort of turn back around at the end of it. Now, some people would hear that, Ben, and they would say, he's just saying that at the end so that he doesn't come across like a total jerk.
Well, yeah, they didn't let me finish because I was going to come back with the hard stuff. But I do believe, and I have said on numerous occasions, that Paige Patterson and others, for all the good that they have served in the convention, I believe that that good is in danger of being eclipsed by recklessness, by carelessness, and by a distillation of political power that violates our Baptist way of doing religion, a sort of a democratic grassroots. We call them messengers to our annual convention. The convention is the boss, not boss or party leaders. And so I just think that there's been some real need for critique, and sometimes in Southern Baptist life, and I think in political life in general, and religious life certainly, you have to shout to be heard above a whisper, and so I, to some extent, I made that commitment, and have been experiencing moderate success.
Michael Benn said to us earlier, Baptists like to fight about certain things, and there is this tradition within the Baptist Church of sort of revolution. Can you give us a little bit of background on that?
Ben is probably the expert on Baptist history. But in reporting this story, you know, one question that would come from my editors is, why this debate over private prayer language, which is basically speaking in tongues in private, why that debate now, and why this particular argument over other issues related to Baptist beliefs?
And let me stop you for a second. And the debate is whether or not it's appropriate to sort of encourage that form of expression of faith. Is that correct?
Whether or not to encourage it, but also whether or not to allow people who admit to having a private prayer language serve as church leaders and particularly serve as missionaries. Because, you know, if you think of it as protecting the brand, there were some concerns potentially, which turned out to not actually be true, but there were concerns that some of the churches that were being established overseas were less Baptist than they might have been otherwise, than they should have been, and that they were more open to charismatic influences, including speaking in tongues.
What makes you more or less Baptist according to the way the church is set up, Ben?
Well, Baptists have historically recognized and respected the freedom of dissent. I mean, we have been some of the chief advocates, and at times the only advocates, for religious liberty and freedom of speech as a component of religious liberty. The person is free to speak their mind, speak their heart, and even organize or assemble to promote their values, religious beliefs in the public square, to use the media to do so. The First Amendment is sort of wrapped up in all of those assurances in the First Amendment wrapped up in this religious liberty clause. And Baptists have historically and continue to be the chief advocates of religious liberty. So what enables, you know, a single Baptist like me or like any pastor or any layperson to be able to take to the Internet or any medium for that matter and express their dissent and to do so with the full conviction that it is thoroughly Baptist and Baptistic for them to do so, I think is the long history of Southern Baptist and Baptist in general, that we are and have been a people of dissent, a people who do not see the necessity to agree with government, agree with one another, agree with other religious bodies on every single point down the page, and yet we can do so with great passion and intensity. And I have basically just claimed the mantle that has been Baptist for centuries, and that is to be able to speak articulately, to speak passionately, and to speak a word of dissent, a minority position. And I've been surprised in the last 24 months to discover on a number of occasions that what I believe to be my minority position turned out to be a majority position.
Well, what's interesting about that and about your discovery that there are others who think the same way is that clearly dissent is not new to the Baptist Church or any other. It's as old as probably faith itself. But Michael, can you talk about how in the past this sort of thing would have been argued, if not behind closed doors, certainly in a much more private manner?
As Ben explained to me, you know, one of the features of the conservative resurgence, this takeover by more conservative Baptists in the 70s and 80s worked around themselves, worked around some of the structures that were in place for discussing these issues. So in formats like, you know, the convention as a whole, in churches and also in the newspapers, all of which were controlled in various ways by the moderate Baptists who had power at the time. The conservatives figured out ways to go around the moderates, I think Ben Wright, by holding private meetings and by having conferences. Yeah. Right.
That's exactly right, and they did hold those kinds of sessions, and in fact, those kinds of sort of smoke-filled rooms have not been unique in the last 27, 28 years in Southern Baptist life. What the conservative leaders in 1979, which was when the resurgence or the takeover launched in Houston, Texas, what they used at their time, the media available to them, was coming into vogue, fax machines, cell phones. They utilized the media available to them to get their message out and did so with remarkable success. Technology has advanced, and there are other media available now, and I think an emerging generation of Southern Baptists are just using the media that is available to them, BlackBerries, cell phones, Internet blogging, email. And
one of the things that was interesting about these dynamics is that it seemed like each successive generation used the technology and figured out a way to organize opinion and to persuade other people in ways that the previous generation had not, even though underlying all of these impulses is basically the same thing. It's this honoring of this tradition of dissent, as Ben had explained. But you know, just like a family, there are these generational blinders that people get put on. So in some of my interviews, I would ask some of these senior Baptists if they thought that, you know, the blogging phenomenon was this sort of manifestation, or if it could be seen as a manifestation of this sort of essential Baptistness, right? The right of any single person to stand up and confess what they believed and to articulate their dissent, and to do it in a way that was rational and polite and very well-versed in the Bible. And these people would say, no, they couldn't see that. I thought that was interesting.
Michael Erard is here. His new piece, Don't Stop Believing, Renegade Bloggers Besiege the Southern Baptist Convention, is in this month's edition of the Texas Observer. We'll be back in a minute to take your calls at 800-933-5372.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, offering adults an opportunity to think for credit. Details on the web at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guests today are Ben Cole, who is pastor of the Parkview Baptist Church in Arlington and also a blogger who writes a column that appears at baptistblog.wordpress.com. Also, journalist Michael Erard is here. He wrote about Ben in the Texas Observer this month. His piece is called Don't Stop Believing, Renegade Bloggers Besiege the Southern Baptist Convention. You can join our conversation today by sending an email to think@kera.org, or you can call 1-800-933-5372. So I guess there are two ways of looking at this, Ben. Some people will say sunshine is the best disinfectant. Other people will say not if you're just airing dirty laundry.
Well, I think, first of all, those people would have to recognize there is some dirty laundry. The question is whether or not it is to be aired and in what form it is to be aired. Southern Baptists are people. We're normal people with normal problems and normal idiosyncrasies and sins that beset us and egos and frailties. And so blogging has just sort of ripped apart the veneer that we've often, all religious people try to present, of having perfectly met the standard of virtue that they espouse. And so blogging has served a purpose to provide a check on everyone from the top level, top highest levels of denominational life to the lowest levels, that whatever you do in secret is going to be shouted from the housetops. It's a truth that Jesus spoke to his disciples. And blogging has opened up the denominational apparatus. It's opened up the denominational bureaucracy to the folks who couldn't make it to the conventions, the pastors and lay people who don't go to the trustee meetings. And they can be engaged and involved and informed about what's happening in the denomination they've grown up in, the convention that they love and care about, they support financially and pray for on a regular basis. Blogging is a useful media in that. Have there been some bumps along the road? Yes. Have I been one of them? Most definitely. And so I think that as blogging and as its influence on religious culture and American evangelical life is sort of morphing, it's finding its own level, it's getting the feet under its ground, I think that we'll see how exactly this dynamic engaging of issues in an immediate forum like blogging is going to foster change in our convention. The change is going to be more rapid, but that's the nature of our culture. Change occurs at a faster pace because of technology now. And so those who sort of have the conservative mindset say that change should occur slow, if at all. There's this old joke that how many Baptists does it take to change a light bulb? You know, the answer is change. You know, who wants to change one? Baptists are in a changing time right now. There's generational change. There's a cultural change going on. I think there's even a political change. Baptists are pulling back in our convention from what has become overt identification with right-wing Republican politics to become a more centrist position or apolitical, that we are outside of the political parties. We speak prophetically to them. We can encourage and nurture those things that are within our immediate concerns, but we're not going to provide the theological and political muscle to force through, you know, amnesty bills.
Well, as Ben talks about change, Michael, I think about something that came through very clearly in your article, which is the idea of the kind of power this carries, because you communicate, for example, if Catholics are not happy with their new bishops, they can blog about it, they can complain about it, they can talk about it. But essentially, that institution is not set up to allow the people to change anything. Whereas in the Southern Baptist Convention, it is absolutely a body where at least the men get to make choices about who's in charge.
Yeah, and that was, you know, it's an interesting place from a political viewpoint. You know, in 10 years, who knows, maybe even next year, when anthropologists, political scientists have to, you know, go to a place to find a pure democratic democratic political system because maybe they want to rebuild someone else's political system, they might go to the Southern Baptist Convention where, you know, there are for 2 days a year, and people like Ben were very proud of pointing this out, it becomes the largest deliberative body in the country, if not the world. And as a deliberative body, you know, it's 8,000 or 8,600 something people in San Antonio this year, all of whom were charged with voting on certain resolutions and other matters of business that would direct the convention in a particular way or not. And what was so interesting about that was that there is no lobbying that goes on. Think of any legislature, any state legislature, there's lobbying that goes on. There's virtually no media except for the blogs that go on, but there's no media that influences what people are going to do on the floor that day. So as a, and this is one of the things that drew me to writing about Ben as a character, was that here was someone who had learned how to cut his political teeth really in this political setting that was pure. You know, people take on these political roles and these political arguments with the gusto of people in student government. You know, I hadn't really seen people go at something like since I was in college, and yet the stakes are huge. So I thought it was an interesting contrast.
Michael's right. The stakes are huge. It's a, you know, $500 million annual budget, I think, is what we total get into cooperative missions, including our central unified giving plan and then additional offerings. I may be wrong on the figure. And he's also right that there's not really lobbying that goes on, though I think it would be incorrect for your readers to assume that there's not any caucusing that goes on.
Let me interrupt you for just a second.
Sure.
There's not lobbying because that's the policy, or because no one's interested in doing that?
Well, I guess it depends on how you define lobbying. Is there sort of external lobbying? Does the National Rifle Association show up with, you know, handouts and freebies for Southern Baptist Convention messengers?
Right, yeah, no,
so that,
that's what I meant by lobbying.
Yeah, they're not handing out, you know, free ammo packs to convention messengers going in so that we'll pass a resolution in opposition to handgun control laws or something like that. There's not that kind of external lobbying. If there's internal lobbying, perhaps it is our convention agencies who, you know, have certain interests, and there's always the discussion about the division of our unified budget, which agency gets what amount of money. But there's nothing, I think, that would even come close to the kind of lobbying that we see on the national political scale.
But I think the point was that it's a political space. It's a group of people who are very easily, and when I say easily, I don't mean that in a negative way, but easily persuaded. You know, they don't have necessarily previous commitments that have either been bought or sold. And so for someone like Ben to show up, someone who is obviously very verbally facile as a speaker and as a writer, can become very powerful, and that's part of the power that blogs have, and that's part of the power that verbal skill has among the Southern Baptists that just doesn't seem to have that same power in other denominations.
I think Michael's made an astute observation. The power of rhetoric in religious life in the Southern Baptist Convention probably harkens back to what it used to be before C-SPAN and other things opened up, you know, Congress. There used to be the power of a senator to go to the floor and to hold the rapt attention of his fellow senators and to sway or move that deliberative body. Now, because of the influence of lobbying and the failure of campaign finance reforms in our country to get a hold on some of those external influences on our political processes, we don't see that. But at the Southern Baptist Convention, you do see that. And you do see, and you see it year by year, a little lady, 70-year-old grandmother, go up to a microphone and in 3 minutes that is given her, maybe even less, express her views in a way that holds the convention's attention and can move the whole body. I've seen it happen countless times where the least likely suspect, the most unusual suspect, gets to a microphone on the floor from a church that nobody's ever heard of and speaks with passion and offers a convincing rationale for a particular action on the floor, motion on the floor of the convention to take a particular action, and the convention moves. The tiniest little rudder can turn that giant ship. And blogging has maybe made the rudder a little bit bigger or a little more noticeable. But
I was going to ask you why that's not enough. Why the purity of what you described at the Southern Baptist Convention, if it is as you describe, why do you need to get past that to really make your points?
Well, I think part of it is because our denominational apparatus has become involved in media, and we have a Baptist press. There is Associated Baptist Press. There are state Baptist papers that are read regularly, and those papers are overseen by editorial boards and editors. And so the message is massaged at every level in Southern Baptist life. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm saying that there's an opportunity for balance here. And blogging has provided a more grassroots control of the flow of information in a religious life in America, but particularly in the Southern Baptist Convention. And there's something you said earlier, Chris, that I'd like to come back to if you'll allow me. You said that, I guess, even the men come together. Well, I normally thought that too. Michael quoted me earlier, I think, in a story saying the Southern Baptist Convention is about as wide as a tractor pull. And I think that's largely true. We are a white Anglo-Saxon group of people, and I've always sort of viewed it as mostly men. It was interesting after this year's convention to see the statistics that came out of who actually registered as messengers. And I believe we had as many women as there were men who were registered as messengers to our annual convention. And that was very, very interesting to me. There is, in spite of some of the trends that we see at the highest levels of our convention, to exclude women from positions that are not within our confessional parameters, specifically cutting women out of professorial positions at our seminaries, demanding that they not be able to serve as church planters on the mission field. Our confessional document says nothing about those things. There has been an effort to exclude women from those positions, and yet, at the same time, there's a growing number of women who are participating. And even on the blogs, some of the best blogs and the most insightful arguments that have been offered by some of these very, very astute ladies who are out there in the blogosphere communicating their ideas.
So, Michael, you've been around and you've read a lot of these other blogs.
Around, yeah.
And can you talk about some of the kinds of, you spoke earlier about this sort of civil sounding discourse, at least at the end of everything after a very pointed set of arguments.
Yeah.
Can you talk about what's being discussed on these blogs?
There are, sometimes it's over my head. It will be referring to debates over the resurgence of Calvinism among Southern Baptists and what different people's positions are on that. There are discussions about drinking alcohol and what the Bible has to say about that. A great, great back and forth about whether or not it's acceptable to be a social drinker, and I discovered that was one of the epithets that you could use to tar a Southern Baptist, is to call him a social drinker. Issues like not so much national politics, I don't think, but at the time that I started reading blogs, the Baptist blogs, really heavily for this story, I think was probably after this shift had already begun where the Southern Baptists and probably evangelicals as a whole were starting to become more inwardly focused. Ben mentioned the tendency of the Baptists to identify very strongly with conservative political agendas. And after the 2006 election, but even before that, people were turning away from those agendas because they either felt that they'd been let down, or they felt like those particular politicians weren't the best vectors for that agenda. So they're turning back more to addressing denominational issues. What goes on? What does it mean to be a Southern Baptist, basically? And what is the future of that? How is the Southern Baptist Convention going to be relevant to the culture more broadly in the future? That's what I was seeing.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. The email address is think@kera.org. Can you talk a little bit, Ben, about the response that you've had from people who read your blog? Because I've looked, and there are some people who are quite complimentary, and there are other people who absolutely flay you for the things that you say.
Sure, and I suppose I'm somewhat of a masochist when it comes to that particular issue of people disagreeing with me. I'm more inclined to approve. I moderate the comments on my blog just simply because I want to make sure that they're grammatically correct before they go on my website for more than any other reason. But I'm more likely to send the ones out to be read that disagree with me, because I do cherish that principle of dissent. I want people to disagree with me, and I don't think that I have the whole truth locked up on where the Southern Baptist Convention ought to be. I'm open to the balanced perspective that folks who disagree bring. What kind of response have I had? I guess in my mind I'd kind of figured when I got to San Antonio I would discover, you know, that there were people lining up with stones ready to hurl them at me.
And, something very biblical to think.
That's exactly right. We're biblical literalists in the Southern Baptist Convention. We stone our heretics.
There are no super soakers in the
Bible. That's right. That's right. So when Michael, in his story, in fact, he talked to me about this after, in his article after this happened, he said that when I first got to a microphone, he could hear this sort of swelling in the crowd of almost like, oh,
there's that guy.
Yeah, there's
because
that guy.
Because it's a huge number of people, right? And when someone steps up to a microphone, their face is projected up on these huge screens, and the person at the microphone will say, hi, and they'll say their name and what church they're affiliated with, and usually the state, right? And Ben got up and said, hi, I'm Ben Cole with Parkview Baptist Church, and really where I was sitting there was quite a swell of muttering, as in, oh, there's that guy.
We're going to take a quick break and then return to the rest of this story. We're talking with journalist Michael Erard, who wrote Don't Stop Believing, Renegade Bloggers Besieged the Southern Baptist Convention for this month's Texas Observer magazine. And we have also one of those renegade bloggers with us, Pastor Ben Cole of Parkview Baptist Church in Arlington. You can join our conversation today by calling 1-800-933-5372, or you can email think@kera.org.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, offering adults an opportunity to think for credit. Details on the web at smu.edu/MLS.
Listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're talking today with journalist Michael Erard and Pastor Ben Cole of the Parkview Baptist Church in Arlington. Michael's article in the Texas Observer this month is called Don't Stop Believing, Renegade Bloggers Besieged the Southern Baptist Convention. And just before the break, Ben, you were telling the story, along with Michael, of that moment when you actually got up in front of the Southern Baptist Convention, yeah. And there was this sort of great, I guess, nervous anticipation on the part of people there?
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, I wasn't really thinking about that. I wasn't paying much attention to it. I had something I wanted to say and, you know, was looking in the camera to make sure my tie was straight, I suppose.
You know, Ben doesn't post his picture on the blog, and I don't think there are very many pictures of you in circulation on the web. And so for a lot of people, you know, it was their first time seeing him. What was also interesting is that people, for as much power as the bloggers have and as prominent as they've become, not a lot of people actually read the blogs, which is interesting. Some of the people who are critical of the bloggers and those bloggers, I would ask them, do you read? And they would say no. I'm like, well, how do you know what is going on the blogs? And they were trusting other people's descriptions of the blogs and what the content was. I thought that was puzzling, really.
Does it frustrate you?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't frustrate me at all. You know, I think blogging is a medium that's going to be read by some and completely rejected by others, and that's the nature of all media. I think. I suppose there are some Southern Baptists who still think the color television is of the devil. You know, I feel sorry for them, but nonetheless, I understand that they have that deeply held value. I think what Michael's touched upon, though, is that blogging has been spun. To some degree, in Baptist media and outside Baptist media. There has become a symbiotic relationship. And even the people who hate blogs wish that they would, die overnight, a thousand deaths, still write about them in their editorials for their Baptist state papers and cover stories about blogging. Just yesterday, Associated Baptist Press had a top story about four endorsements that we didn't think were much on the blog site SBC Outpost, with which I'm a part, sbcoutpost.com. And it became a story. So there's this symbiotic relationship between traditional religious media, even secular media, and bloggers. It has become newsworthy. It has become news. And blogging has steered the conversation both in our convention leadership, trustee meetings at times, but also in the public perception. And so, I mean, I think that's just... That's just sort of – that's the hand we've been dealt, and so we play it, not that I'm endorsing gambling.
One of the dynamics, if I were to write a sequel to my Observer story, it would be about what happened to the Baptist bloggers after this particular meeting. I think that, you know, I've followed blogs, and political blogs particularly, in the broader blogosphere for a while, and those people seem to be – very resistant to any sort of, or to much, centralization. And when there are opportunities for a blogger to join up with other bloggers or, you know, to join up with mainstream media outlets, there is some consternation, I think, about that. And I was surprised that even before the convention was over, a lot of the bloggers were saying, the Baptist bloggers, they were saying, "I'm going to stop doing this," and I don't know, Ben. The question, I guess, for you is, you know, do you think that in doing that, that the people, the Baptists who have been blogging, were taking the spin about blogs in the Baptist media and by the leaders to heart?
Well, I think that's a good question, Michael. You know, bloggers are concerned about how they're perceived. The ones that I know and that I talk with, you know, are not so foolish as to think that the very deeply held values and visions that they have for Southern Baptist life will have any effect if they become so completely marginalized that their voice is never regarded as valid. There are some people who regard anything that's said on blogs as invalid just because the medium in which it's communicated. And so I think bloggers are concerned about that. Nevertheless, there's two responses, I think, that I have to that. Number one, while bloggers may be concerned about the response that they get from the denominational hierarchy and from even some grassroots corners of our convention, I think by and large they realize that any publicity is good publicity, and that the more people are talking about how bad you are, the more likely it is that folks will go read you and discover that you're not nearly as bad as your detractors characterize
you. Is that how you feel?
Well, I have received a great degree of criticism and a great degree of praise from some places. I'm not doing it for either for the criticism or for the praise. I just felt like some issues needed to be addressed. I think they needed to be addressed very poignantly and very quickly. And so I took to the blog in a very intentional way to expose some things that I felt were deeply troubling in Southern Baptist life, things that involved particular people. And you asked me earlier in the program, why did I bring up specific persons and specific instances that I felt were problematic in convention life? The reason is because as long as you speak in generalities, people will disregard what you say as, you know, you don't have any proof to back it up. There were cries for 12 months for me, Wade Burleson, who's a pastor in Enid, Oklahoma, and others, to produce evidence, documentation, to substantiate our concerns that this convention was headed towards narrow, rigid fundamentalism, was wasting away in bureaucratic excess, was being manipulated behind the scenes by high-powered and high-placed political players. And so I said, okay, you want the evidence? Here it is. And I began putting documentation up, and some of the things that you mentioned already were some of them, and there were countless others. And it was interesting because there grew this silence among the critics saying, well, where's your evidence? And then the cry became, well, you shouldn't have put that out. And so you're sort of damned if you do and damned if you don't, I suppose. And not that I endorse the using of the word damn.
What's the euphemism you're now using on your blog for that? Or is that another word?
No, I don't remember. I've invented a whole host of phrases that'll cover me whenever I feel the need to use unnecessary expletive.
Just make sure the FCC is
that's right.
Is blessing what you
say.
That's
right. That's right. The second thing, Michael, that I was going to say in response to that is back to this Godfather analogy that I like to touch upon so often. All the bloggers walked out of San Antonio and said, "We're out. We're done. We're washing our hands of it. We're walking away." And like, you know, Michael Corleone, every time we try to get out, they pull us back in. For now, this is where we are.
Well, we have an email from Sarah who asks, what keeps you within the fold? Why not join one of the more moderate conventions?
Well,
good question,
man. Yeah, I think, thank you, Sarah. I suppose that I have never had to ask myself that question about why do I stay Southern Baptist. I've often said if I wasn't Southern Baptist, I would be Roman Catholic. I figure if you're going to venture away, go all the way back. And I'm happy with where I am now. This is who I am, and I think that the Southern Baptist Convention is a place that has been designed to allow for a diversity of viewpoints on issues that are not essential to the Christian faith or to Baptist identity. And so this is where I am, and this is where I feel comfortable. And no one's going to. The remarkable thing is that no one can kick me out. No one can push me out. They can pray me out, and I suppose many have. But I don't go anywhere unless I choose to. So that's the remarkable blessing of being Baptist. You really can't be excommunicated in Southern Baptist life.
Michael, I don't want to get into too many personal questions, but are you a Southern Baptist yourself?
No.
So I'm wondering if you could talk about some of the things that you learned through the course of covering this story and the Southern Baptist Convention and what's gone on with Ben and some of his associates.
Learned about how to be Southern Baptist?
Well,
how to fake it if I had to?
No, I'm not asking you to, you know, bring a potluck or something. But I mean, I'm wondering if you...
Jell-O salad always wins.
Well, if you started with misconceptions about what you would find.
Yeah, one thing that surprised me was the amount of diversity there is among Southern Baptists. And by diversity, I mean, Ben made the reference to ethnic, racial diversity. It's a theological diversity, you know. And that was something, you know, if you are not a part of, and I'm not evangelical, you know, of any stripe, you know, if you're not a part of that world, if you're part of a secular world, you look at the evangelicals and you think that it's, you know, it's a set of people with static beliefs, monolithic in nature. And I didn't find that at all. There is so much diversity and discussion and argument going on. And I liked seeing how people, dealt with that. I mean, again, back to the civil thing, and I can see, you know, and I think in some ways I was attracted to telling the story of how Ben and Wade and the other bloggers are so attached to that specific character of being a Baptist that they would set out to try to defend it.
Ben, you were already that guy when you got up to speak. I'm wondering if you felt there was any risk in giving your story over to someone like Michael to sort of put it out there in a secular publication where you would have no control over what it said.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that there's a risk, but I didn't really weigh that. I got to know Michael and felt, you know, a remarkable degree of comfort in talking with him. In fact, invited him to shadow me. Pretty much everywhere at the convention. There was caucusing that went on. We had a suite at the hotel, the Marriott River Center Hotel down there, and One evening we had, I guess, 30 or 40 people there, and Michael and a reporter from the Dallas Morning News, Sam Hodges, who I think is the best religion writer in the country, and then Eric Gorski from Associated Press, they were our guests there also. So in all of that, I guess I just learned that ultimately there's an interest in the story. The more that you appear to be concealing the facts, the less likely it is that your story is going to be told fairly. And so I was glad to spend the time with Michael that I did. And in fact, once his story came out, I was glad that I was as open as I did, because there were some folks that he interviewed for his story that I think were less than honest. And he was able, because of the information that I'd provided in the documentation I'd given him, to give counter to the erroneous impressions that were given to him by others who contributed to the article.
So where do you go from here? You have aspirations outside the church, in addition to, you're going to remain Southern Baptist, but you may take a different career path?
Well, yeah, I think indefinitely. I mean, I've told my church this countless times. You know, it is not in my long-term plan to stay in a senior pastoral role. I've said that for years. In fact, I did not think that I would be doing it this long. My goal is to finish a PhD that I'm finalizing at Baylor University. In the Department of Church State Studies. I want to pursue a law school, and so within the next year or so, I'm going to be making some very key decisions about that, and preparing myself for the ability to influence on a broader scale than just Southern Baptist Convention, to articulate values that are traditionally Baptist values regarding religious liberty, separation of church and state, et cetera. I would like to say this. You asked Michael what he learned about being Southern Baptist from going to the Southern Baptist Convention. I really learned something from Michael as well. I learned something about how to be a better Southern Baptist from him, in a way that probably he didn't intend for me to learn, but I did nonetheless. Wednesday afternoon of the convention, Michael and I went and found a little hospitality suite and did about an hour-long interview. And at the end of the interview, he asked me, he said, something you haven't mentioned yet, and I'd like to ask you about, and that is, how did you become a Christian? When, you know, what was the moment in your life when you became a Christian? And it really didn't dawn on me that I hadn't told him that. He was the journalist. He asked the questions, and I shared with him. And I said, well, thank you, Michael, for asking. I said, I didn't really want to insert that into the interview at some point, because it would seem so hokey. And he said, well, thank you, because more often than not, journalists do get this. As soon as the interview's, you know, over, midway through it, a religious leader they're interviewing says, well, now that you've asked me some questions, let me ask you a question. If you were to die right now and were to stand before God, and he would ask you, why should I let you into heaven, what would you say? And it becomes this sort of forced encounter of evangelism. And Michael told me he really appreciated that I had not, I had respected his job, his occupation, what he was there for, but that he was ultimately interested. And it really struck a chord with me that if Southern Baptist are really concerned about influencing people, making a difference in people's lives, and just being a friend to people, that we ought to listen as much as we speak. And if we listen, we may earn the right to tell our story.
You can read Pastor Ben Cole's blog at baptistblog.wordpress.com. You can read Michael Erard's piece in the Texas Observer online. It's called Don't Stop Believing, Renegade Bloggers Besiege the Southern Baptist Convention. It's been a pleasure speaking with both of you guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
Chris.
Thank
you, Chris.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro, with production assistance from Maggie Conklin. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.